Hey, Mark.
Hey, Katie.
Hey, you want to do a podcast?
Yeah.
Sweet. Okay. Welcome to the Unforget Yourself show, where we use the power of woo and the proof of science to help you identify your blind spots, get over your own bullshit, so that you can do the fucking thing you actually want to do.
Absolutely. I'm Mark.
And I'm Katie.
And we're the founders of Unforget Yourself and the creators of the Unforget Yourself system. Look, being a business owner is tough.
Yeah.
With vulnerability and with humor, mm-hmm. we'll be sharing with you the real stories behind the success of those brave and crazy enough to start their own business. And to show you that you're not alone.
You're not. Well, from the accidental entrepreneur to the laser-focused CEO, we have honest conversations about how they got to where they are today. We talk about the challenges that they faced and what they're currently dealing with in real time on their roller coaster journey. Along the way, we want to show you that it's you. You are the most important asset in your business.
Yeah, you are. So let's cut the bullshit and start the show.
Enjoy.
Okay, hello everyone and welcome to the show. Now, just a quick interruption to your normally scheduled podcast. Are you thinking about starting your own podcast? Or maybe you have a podcast, but it's an expensive hobby or a labor of love. But what if a podcast wasn't just a podcast? Imagine turning your ideas, your skills, your gift into a profitable business tool. At Profitable Podcasts, we help coaches and entrepreneurs to create, launch, and monetize their podcasts with ease to build visibility and authority and attract leads and clients easily and simply. So skip the overwhelm and the never-ending social media, emails, workshops, networking, and attract your perfect clients, all without spending a thing on ads. So if you're ready to make your voice your most powerful asset, let's talk. Reach out or head over to profitablepodcast.com to see how this will work for you. And now, on to your scheduled podcast episode. So today we have with us Michelle Masters, an internationally acclaimed best-selling author and transformational coach who helps people break through blocks in money, relationships, and well-being through her unique blend of neuroscience techniques and quantum modalities. Through her transformative courses and coaching programs, Michelle guides clients to create permanent positive change without having to work harder. Drawing from her extensive experience dating back to 1995 in both personal development and family work. Now, Michelle's journey from studying theater and teaching environmental education to becoming known as the coach's coach demonstrates how unconventional paths can lead to extraordinary expertise. And while traveling the world to share her money magic workshop and appearing alongside other leaders like Bruce Lipton and Greg Braden, she's helping others access greater levels of happiness, peace, and satisfaction through lasting transformation. Oh, I love this. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Nice to be here.
Oh, thank you so, so much for joining us. So to just kick us off, can you expand a touch more on where you are today with your business and who is it that you love to work with?
Right. Well, yes, my business is in after doing it for 30 years and my business is at a place where it's really about to go much bigger. You know, there's been some things that have happened, books that are about to be republished and docuseries, all that. But, you know, I briefly considered being a therapist when I was younger, and then I realized listening to people talk about what was stuck and not being able to do anything about it was way too much like how I grew up, and I was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
But somebody suggested, in 1994, I go to this free workshop, and in that workshop, it was only a three-hour workshop, they had these like little parlor tricks they were doing. But I could actually feel things change. I did like 4 years of therapy with a saint, an absolute saint. I love that woman. She helped me so much, but nothing changed. Like I felt, had more self-acceptance. I had an awareness like, oh, I guess that's not normal, right? Someone, or that wasn't ideal how I grew up, but nothing changed. And so even in the little tiny pile of tricks they were doing, I felt stuff changed and it stayed changed. And I thought, if they can do that in 15 minutes, what can these tools actually do? And so within a year, I was still studying with them, but already starting to help them teach. And I became a trainer for them. I was a trainer for them for 25 years. And then I learned the family constellation work, which is magic. It was the one thing, like with the neuroscience tools, we could get so many changes, but there was some stuff that just wouldn't budge no matter what we did. And when I encountered the family constellation work, this family loyalty is what some people call ancestral loyalties. It was like the piece that was missing. And I will tell you, it's the biggest block to people getting what they want or leading the lives they want. Is often the family ancestral piece. And then I started adding in some quantum stuff, and it just became so fun and magical at that point that I just love to get to work with
Okay,
folks.
well, then let's expand on that a touch because this is where your passion is. So, yes, information and awareness only goes so far. There needs to be change. I mean, they say information or knowledge is power. No, application is damn power. We need to do something with it. So, talk to me about this, the family ancestral piece. Talk to me about these things. It does come back to knowledge and awareness that maybe you don't know, but from that place, piecing it into something more tangible. So, can you guide me through how you serve your clients to be able to get that awareness, understand why it happens, and then have the tools, tactics, resources, ability to move through that?
Well, let me back up just a step because the thing about information is information we receive at a conscious level, right? And we make the decision we want something different at a conscious level. The stuff that is in our way is not at a conscious level. It's literally stored in a different part of the brain. So trying to consciously change something that is unconscious is like if you've got faulty wiring in the basement of a 40-story building and you send a team of people up to the penthouse to talk about it, it's not going to change the wiring. Somebody needs to go down in the basement and actually rewire, like update the wiring. It's not about understanding it or talking about it. It's about actually getting it rewired. When it comes to the family loyalty piece, it doesn't seem to be held in our neurology. It seems to be sourced in sort of like this field of consciousness that Bert Hellinger called the family conscience. So it operates outside of time and space. For that reason, it is a little trickier to shift because with the stuff that's old beliefs, old identity, you know, feelings of self-worth, lack of self-worth, you have to work hard, all that kind of patterning, that can be changed. That's held in your neurology. That's a much more straightforward event to change. But the stuff about the ancestral loyalty, like, you know, everybody in my family struggled, or, you know, my parents were depressed, or this or that, that's a tougher gig. And so there are tools that you can do it, you can use to help people get to the place where they can let it go. But that one comes down to some part of them has to be ready. And I will tell you, the older somebody gets, the more ready they are. People in their 20s still have hope that they can heal their families. Anybody who, even in their 30s, early 30s, people say, no, I can help them. I can help my family. Once they get to their 40s and 50s, it becomes glaringly obvious that, oh, that's never going to work. Like they're going to do what they're going to do. And so everything we do to try and heal them is futile. And a lot of what we do to try and heal them keeps us stuck. So there is in that letting getting some recognition because most often people don't even know they're doing it. It is so just woven into the fabric of us that it's not okay to have it better than the people we come from. I mean, if you go to a restaurant, right, a good restaurant, and you order your appetizer comes first. There's like six of you. It's a good restaurant. Everybody's food is coming, but yours comes first. Everybody says, no, eat it while it's hot. How weird does it feel? Like, how far does that first, like, coconut shrimp get up to your mouth before it's like, it just feels too weird to be eating when nobody else's food is there. And so that's a micro scale. On a macro scale, we just feel guilty when we have it better than the people we come from or better than others. And so if we can't make it better for them, we will limit how good it is for us. So, in terms of shifting that, first we have to acknowledge that, oh, yeah, that's actually running.
Okay, tell me where this comes from because that I think it's a beautiful that's you simplified it down beautifully there. So if at the very core an aspect is we feel guilty we have it better than other people, even when the food comes out first. I remember at the weekend we were on a birthday party and some people's food came out first, like, oh, eat it now. But you could sense there was a little bit of awkwardness. And I mean, I'm there if mine comes out first. I don't want mine to go cold. I don't want to be seen as rude. So there is societal. There are so many. You say about the there's conscious, subconscious, and unconscious. So there's what we're doing. There's the way it runs in the background, and there's where the program lives. So let's talk about that place where the program lives, where these rules, these things we have to abide by are. How do you start to tap into this and see it and break it apart?
The easiest way to start to see what like kind of your core beliefs are is ask somebody what happens in your life, like what happens in your business? What, especially the places that don't work, whatever they say, you can pr like, well, you know, gosh, I'm just working way too hard. Okay, there are beliefs you have to work too hard, right? It's simple. It's not like even rocket science. Like, well, every time I get a big gain, it goes away. Okay, there's a belief that not okay to have a big gain. If you get it, it has to go away. Like, it's the things that I've had people tell me, oh, that's not a belief. That's just how you do business. I've never done business that way, and I've done just fine. It's not a belief, but when it is a core belief, we will not see it as a belief. We will see it as, oh, that's just the way things work. That's just how things are.
Ah, so those sneaky things that find the core beliefs, they're not the things that we think of. So, okay, so there's a reframe. So it's a, we have to play investigator and actually
We have to.
remove these labels we've assigned.
Well, there's some very quick ways. Luckily, I have some very quick ways to get access to where it's stored, because those things that are belief, like, if you don't work hard, you don't deserve it. You don't deserve it. How many times have you heard people say, well, yeah, it's a really nice house, but I worked hard for it? Like, just you have to justify the good that comes through hard work. There are some fast ways to find out where that patterning is stored, because it's not stored in the conscious parts of the brain. It's stored in really old parts of the brain. And the brain operates a lot like the US government. There are different departments who do not communicate with each other and frankly regard each other with suspicion. And so our beliefs are held in these really old parts of the brain where they're not conscious. And so to change them, you have to actually access where the patterning is held. Like that going down into the basement. Rewire it there. And if you rewire it there and do it properly, it stays rewired. You don't have to change it. You don't have to practice it. You don't have to affirm it. Like if you have a software issue and you resolve it, you don't have to give your computer affirmations, right? You don't have to tell it you're powerful software, right? You don't have to hold it accountable. I thought we agreed. Like if it's properly rewritten, it stays rewritten. So a lot of it is just old software. If you think about the fact,
Hold, I love this. This is fascinating. I love going through this at this deep level now, but we're all inundated with here's the quick hack, here's what you need to do, affirmations, this, that, and they all have a place. Everything has a purpose, everything has something that it can solve or something that it can do. But we're told how hard it can be, how long it takes to change this. So this is a shift in perspective for a lot of people because of what we've been told, what we believe. And also we want to believe that it's hard work because that then proves it's okay. It's hard work. Therefore, it's the justification or a validation for us. So how do you help simplify it? So now we're trying to simplify the ability to understand that this is possible. Now we get into a belief about the belief system. Talk me through that to help other people who are like, yeah, it sounds great, but here we go again. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, I know. And that's the problem. You know, when I tell people what happens, it sounds like hype because there's a lot of hype out there. But let me give you kind of a negative example so you can see. Again, restaurants. Imagine there's a restaurant that you love. You've been to it 50 times, okay? One time you go and you get food poisoning. After that, when you think about that restaurant, what happens?
That's what you think of.
Yeah, that's all you think of. One trial learning, right? Because it was such a visceral response and it got the attention of your safety system, it kind of overrides and wipes out every other good experience you had. So you could go there another 150 times and it'd be good. And still in the back of your mind, that would be running because it's a very visceral thing. And most of our beliefs are formed when we're six or most of them before we're 3 years old. And they're very visceral experiences. So to change something that is wired in that viscerally, you need to viscerally rewire it to something else.
Give me an
And
example of
so,
that, because that makes so much sense, because biologically we're set up for safety and security.
yes.
So yeah, if that one thing goes wrong, our brain is like, this is a primary directive. That place is
Yes.
not safe. You eat something wrong, you may die, not worth the risk. So we're
Right.
trying to override that, even though we're not hearing that. It's
Oh, no.
embedded.
It's light speed, right? Because it's in
Yeah.
charge of your survival. There's no dilly-dallying around. It's like safe or not safe. Not sure, not safe. So that is how this part of the brain works. And so, but this part of the brain can't tell the difference between something you're actually experiencing, something you're remembering, and something you imagine. For it, everything is true and real and right now. So when bad things happen when we're young, and it may just be mom or dad was having a bad day, we asked for what we wanted, bad things happen, shouting or shaming, and that's like a bad shrimp, right? The system goes, ooh, okay.
Bad shrimp. I love that. I'm using that.
Yeah, don't ask for what you want because that could happen. Or let's say a kid's in that age where they're wanting stuff and mom has a breakdown. Ooh, don't do that. Bad things can happen. Or a kid.
Or I saw some success and then something not even linked happened. A grandparent dies. Therefore,
Yes.
this equals that. So even
Yes.
things not linked can trigger, right?
Yes, simultaneous, therefore related, because that part of the brain is just making pure associations. There's no evaluation. There's no, well, that really had nothing to, that part of the brain doesn't even, that's the left hemisphere, and it's basically just holding up your hair until you're 7 or 8 years old.
I love that. So yeah, from what we've, I mean, me and Katie were talking about this not long ago. Up to the age of seven, you are a sponge. You're taking in, you're taking in. You can't remember much because you're just taking in. It's absorbing. Even though those things are not connected, there's no logic to it. It's, oh, that equals that without thinking about it. So
Yeah,
I
everything is
love this.
related to everything. That's the right hemisphere.
I think your expertise here is, so we spoke about this a lot on the podcast, but that next step, that visceral rewiring, can you start to, because you mentioned that you teased us a little bit earlier about the imagination and the memories are pretty much the same kind of thing. So can you just expand on that visceral rewiring and how that's, and what that actually is?
Yeah, because like I said, that part of your brain can't tell time. So those experiences from when we were younger, and the more dangerous they felt, the more they are running on a 24-hour loop in your brain, below your conscious awareness, but they are on a 24-hour loop. And for this part of your brain, it's right now. And so part of it is accessing that loop, like the part of the brain where that patterning is stored, what's running, and then starting to update it. By creating new neural nets, it actually is rewiring something the adult brain knows now and rewiring it to that and wiring it up to that part of the brain. And then all of a sudden, it's like you can say to somebody, but you have to access the part of the brain where it's stored. You can say to somebody, look, that's not happening anymore. You're actually, at this point, you're safe. You didn't die. You're not that small. Like, whatever the beliefs are, you can actually wire it up to the adult part of their brain that has a much broader perspective and understanding now. At that, because the more dangerous something was, the more it's quarantined in the brain, it's called encapsulated. And so it is designed to not be updatable. But when you do it this way, now you have neural connections between that part of your brain and your adult brain. And that is, you have no idea what a game changer that is. Suddenly, it is harder to get stuck in that old loop because your conscious mind has not, is it's now connected to the thing you want it to be connected to, which is an understanding that, oh, I'm okay. That was
Yes.
never about me.
Okay. So if imagination and memory are the same thing, because I can think back
For
to
this, yeah.
So I can think back to the weekend, for example, and yeah, that meal I had. I can also go back and think of that meal and I can imagine things levitating and floating. It didn't happen, but I
Right.
can picture that. That is the same beast. So if they're the same, so it sounds like what you're saying is on automatic, an automatic trait of ours is to, when we rethink, re-remember, imagine that negative thing happening, we're reinforcing, reinforcing, reinforcing. Whereas if we can imagine an alternative, a different, a better, we start to do that. But because we always think of the negative, oh, we don't mean to, but we're just reinforcing this all the time.
Well, the thing is, I mean, this is the only reason going to the movies is any fun at all, right? Because your head knows, you know what, I'm 25 miles in an air-conditioned theater, chance of shark attack relatively low. You see a shark on the screen and your heart rate goes up, right? It's an automatic response to predator. So trying to sit there in the movie where you see a shark coming at you and imagine something different is way too much work. But if you can set it up so that the place that used to automatically go to the shark thing now goes to fields of daisies and puppies. This is a really crude example because I've never done that, nor would I. But if that becomes automatic, then you don't have to work at it. It's just different. You just feel safer. The world is safer. You attract different kinds of clients. Different things happen without you trying.
So, okay, I've loved this. This is so much fun to sort of go through these nuances, these principles. I'll make this real because as someone who knows, who studied this, who teaches this at a high level, and also as a business owner who you are growing your business, you're seeing a lot of growth this year. You're changing, you're helping more people. You're actually battling, seeing, remembering old things happening to you. So you're almost teaching this, and as a human, of course, you're going through this at the same time. What's it like for you as you kind of hold these two things as true?
Well, the thing is, I've been doing this for 30 years. If I have something up, I have to go to somebody else because I can't do it on myself. I'm blind to my own blind spots, right? And there are certain things you don't even realize are an issue until you expand to the point where those kind of limitations kick in, right? So you can I had one doctor. She used to come to me every year to get her financial ceiling raised because she would hit a financial ceiling. We'd change that. She'd go off. She'd go up to the next, she'd expand, and then she'd hit a ceiling she didn't know was there because she'd never been there before and come back the next year, right? So as we expand, we hit things we didn't even know were an issue because we hadn't gone far enough to experience, oh, who knew that limitation was out there? Right? And the more core it is, the more blind we are to it. So I can still find myself blind to my own stuff, even after 30 years. Like it's a little embarrassing, but it still happens. Like, oh yeah. Who knew that was running? I mean, in hindsight, it's like, yeah, it has limited everything.
So as entrepreneurs, as humans, our job is to expand until those limitations kick in. So that should be a celebration that we expand this level. And it's like, oh, I have this fear. I have this doubt. There is this overwhelm. So it's always lying dormant. It's always there. Like, I mean, we're about to hit spring. So there are some buds, there are some flowers coming through. It's a celebration of, okay, these things bud and grow when you hit this certain level, this certain season in your life. Okay, here it is. So if this is now spring in your new level of business, what are those the buds, the maybe call them the weeds? What are those things that are going to be, you can see them creeping through, that's like, oh hey, new limitation. I never knew I planted you there. What are they for you right now?
It's been interesting because I've been exposed lately to a lot of people who are operating at a very high level in the field, and to realize that what I'm offering is at least as good as what is being offered by the people who are top in the field requires me to step into a different identity. And it's an interesting dynamic because it's important in my work for people to feel safe with me. So there's this balance of owning the expertise and the skill, but without it being in a way that is intimidating for people. Like when I started networking, woman said, "Let me show you the power suits." I'm like, "Oh no, do you have any clothes that say I am no threat to you whatsoever?" Because the safer people feel, the more I can help them, right? So it's an interesting dance of actually taking an appropriate place in the world, but being able to maintain that experience of accessibility.
But you get to do your own path here, because I think I love the way you said that. Here's your power suit. I don't want that. Again, there's a belief, there is a societal norm. Here's what you need to do, rather than hold on. What's my way of doing this? You're growing, you're evolving, but you know that your way is through accessibility, relatability, comfort, allowance. There is how much, yeah, how much you can you bring to your next evolution? So this new identity, it's half the battle working out what's mine and what is other people's.
Say more. What's other people's how? What's mine and what's other people's?
What's other people's beliefs,
Oh,
thoughts,
yeah, got
rules,
it.
programming, strategies, example.
Yeah. Well, that's for one reason or another, that's always been fairly clear to me. But what has been a more difficult thing is how do I communicate the value and the experience of this in a way that doesn't kill the soul of it? Because, you know, anybody who's tried to do marketing for me has their work cut out for them, because a lot of the standard ways of marketing stuff, the vibration of it and the presuppositions of it are antithetical to what I do. And so they will literally cancel each other out. Like if people try to use fear-based stuff, you know, don't want to miss out on this because, you know, you'll be, you know, losing out on this and losing out on that. And that fear-based stuff does not go well with what I'm teaching. And it's almost like, light waves at different points in their cycle will cancel each other out. So trying to find a way to communicate it in a way that makes it accessible to people without using so many of the tactics that have been used in the past is new territory for me. So
That's where the fun and games comes in. I mean, we've grown our business. And forget yourself. It's intangible in what you get. Very similar to the way that kind of you work, and that intangibility is hard to market. We're always told you got to go for the pain points, go for the desires.
Yes.
What's the dollar amount they're going to get from their business by applying this? And sometimes it's hard to be. We've had a number of agencies. It didn't work out well for us because I think we're following their rules and what they wanted. It was shoehorning it in. What we found is, I mean, even from like through podcasting, through conversations, by talking to our people, this value, it comes from them as well. How would they say this? What did they want to hear? What attracted them? So I think it's a gentle dance between authenticity and alignment for you, and the connection with those people that you do have to put them at choice. You do have to help them make a decision, but also you have to bring them in the right way. So it's a gentle dance. It's a tango, which is, it can feel elusive. So is this what you're going for right now? It's the new dance. It's the new level. So what are you most excited about? What, even though it might be nervous or unknown, what are you most looking forward to in the near future?
This is not something that I'm nervous about, but this happened, you know, it happened a couple of years ago. I was doing a retreat. I've been asked to come into a private retreat and do my workshop for them, just for this group. And I didn't know them and they didn't know me. And so I was trying to get to know them beforehand so I could tailor to them. And I asked, you know, what do you want to come out of this? And I tell the story a lot, but it was just such this beautiful young man, he raised his hand and he said, I just want to be the best version of myself. And I can even feel it now. And I got, this is 5 minutes into me meeting these people, but I got super emotional because I'm looking at this beautiful man. And for a moment, I saw him the way like the universe sees him. And I said to him, I said, buddy, box ticked. You're already the best version of you, right? There's no better version you have to become. Now, what would you like? Like, what would make you happy now? Because we spend so much time and energy trying to become what we think we have to be or not be, do or not do.
Yeah.
When we are glorious beyond belief. Now let's just clear up what's in the way of you getting to experience that. Because then you can do whatever you want.
The weight that's lifted, the pressure that's gone. I was just picturing all the marketing, you know, become the best version of yourself. And that has a place. I understand what people mean by that. To hear it in your terms, which is done. Okay,
done.
Cool. The pressure, the relief is like, okay, once you understand that, So let me honor you with that same question. Michelle, what would make you happy now?
More of those moments of getting to be with people in that experience, especially when they start to feel the magic that they are already, not that they won't grow and change, that I would call it even the divinity that they are, but the pure creativity and potentiality that they are, and they get to live from that place without fear, with an inner, just to watch how they interact with people over simple things. When that's their experience, the most simple interaction, even getting your coffee at a coffee bar, can be a magical experience. Like, magic is always that close, but so much of it is that we don't yet experience how magical we are. And so we have to work hard at everything else. When we're designed to be pure magic and to create pure magic.
So if I love that beautiful message, this is a beautiful way to end this episode. So if we are all magic, if we are all magic, if we are all pure and good and our best version from that place, oh, what's possible?
Well, everything, because from that place, there's no lack. There's no shortage of anything. There's no lack of anything. There's no need to hoard anything, defend anything, control anything. It's a game changer. It doesn't matter then how certain the world is. It doesn't matter how uncertain the government is. It doesn't matter about the economy. None of that matters because you are pure magic and you can create pure magic. You don't have to fight anybody for it. You don't have to compete. You don't have to control or manipulate. It's so much less
Michelle,
work.
beautiful. Beautiful. I love that. Look, for those people who want that little bit of magic, they want to see the magic in themselves. How can they find you? How can they reach out?
Sure. They can go to my website, wiredformagic.com, or michellemastersnlp.com. They both take you to the same place. And if you sign up for our email list, which I barely use, you can get the first two chapters of the first edition of my book. It's going to be updated, but you can get the first two chapters and start to just experience, just get some clarity on what's been in the way and how it can change. Or there's courses on there that we do. This is one of the main ways that I help people is through transformational classes and courses.
Fantastic. Well, that's wiredformagic.com. Everyone, if you're curious or think this sounds amazing, go and check it out. Grab that your book. And if you want to, just start the conversation. It's there for you. But again, look, Michelle, thank you so much. This has been an awful lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Okay, you're so welcome. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome. Hey, Katie.
Yeah, Mark.
Want to do an outro?
I sure do.
Sweet. Hey, thank you so much for listening and making it to the end.
Yay, you.
So, what happens next?
We ask them the things that podcasters are supposed to ask at the end of an episode.
Can you please rate, review, download?
Subscribe. Yeah.
But why is it important?
Because that's how our podcast gets noticed.
It's how people find us.
It is, and we want all their earballs.
All the earballs all over the place.
We do.
Nice.
Yeah, so please do all those things. We'll be ever so grateful.
And then more people hear your beautiful voice.
Or yours.
Oh, yeah. See you next time.
Bye.